Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Am I tough enough?
Strong and stable leadership.
Total rhubarb.
Hell yes, I'm tough enough.
Shut the fridge.
Not another one!
It's the Politics Show Pubcast.
Love podcasts, hate nonsense. Welcome to the Politics Show Pubcast.
Oi, oi!
First fucking episode.
We did it.
I'm joined by the inestimable Ava Santina, Politics Show's political correspondent. Ed Campbell, also a relentless Poljo team member. Welcome, chaps.
I'm relentlessly a member of this company's staff. I'm absolutely dogged in my pursuit of employment.
He just won't quit, and you have to respect him for it. It's been a very busy day in Parliament, guys. We'll chat through a little bit of PMQs, and there's also a small matter of the coronation of a new head of state to get into. First things first, Ava, you are our lobby accredited journalist, the only serious journalist among us here. Why don't you explain or run us through a little bit of what happened in the House of Commons today?
So Labour leader Keir Starmer, he started off on housing, and he was talking about the deposit that young people would need to save in order to buy a house, and he lowballed it. He went for £9,000. He said savers would need to accrue £9,000, which is impossible unless they put away a set amount over 4 years, which was very difficult. Now, not to be really boring, but...
Let's start with this.
Good podcast.
Yeah, well, a cursory look at the figures across the UK's major cities. If you look at Birmingham, the average first-time buyer, they put down £38,000 as their deposit. Liverpool and Manchester, around £28,000. And in London, I'm going to knock you senseless, it's around £115,000. So he lowballed it. And I reckon he could have done a real good punch on Rishi there with a little bit more looking into it.
I don't know what the source of those figures is. I don't know where he's got them from.
I thought you meant mine.
No.
I don't know how
I let you get away with saying that even on this podcast.
Fact check you on this podcast.
No, I don't know, because if you don't do Help to Buy, the least amount of deposit you can put down, absolutely full stop, anywhere, is 10%. Since Liz Truss destroyed the mortgage market, basically no bank will give you 10%. You'll have to put down a 15% deposit. But let's just say you do 10. Show me a house worth 90 grand.
Well, that's not in a major city where that have jobs that young people or graduates can immediately fall into. And look, we're not saying that everyone wants to live in a major city. That's not the argument. The point is you shouldn't curtail cities away from people who can't afford it.
The point for me is that I think young people, there's like a key economic political choice that every young person in this country faces. You essentially have to choose between the job you want or owning a home. If you want to, do you want to become a lawyer? Do you want to become a doctor? That's actually, you can probably do that in most places. But, you know, you basically, most sort of employment opportunities, particularly for young people in this country, are centered at the urban centres, right? That's where you go. You go to London, you go to Manchester, you go to Birmingham. And that's fine, dandy, you'll go, you can get rented accommodation. However, your prospects of ever owning a home in those places...
So much lower.
So much lower. So that's on the one hand. Or alternatively, you stay in the place you grew up, maybe market town, village, wherever, where the housing is more affordable. You'll be able to get on the ladder, but the selection you have available to you in terms of gainful employment is really, really quite limited. Maybe there's, I don't know, maybe I'm thinking of my hometown, there's a call center. So, you know, maybe you can go and be a manager in the call center. Maybe you can work at McDonald's, but, you know, you're not, there weren't very many opportunities to become a journalist in the West Midlands, you know?
No.
But it's also that there is probably one managerial role in each of those professions you've just spoken about. So everyone can't do it. That's the whole point of, you know, spread around the country is people move to take up different jobs and different positions. Not every town caters to every person that was born there. That's the point.
And it's also the converse, in that people who live in the cities or born in the cities where housing is getting more and more expensive, you shouldn't have to move halfway across the country to be able to afford a home. Like the 90 grand house, is that only in deepest northern England? What if you're from central? What if you're born in zone two, where all your family are there? So you're supposed to move somewhere where you know nobody, you have no social structure for the sake of owning a home. You wouldn't.
Well,
do
I'm going to bore you, Edward, and tell you that's exactly what did happen to London. Is that most places around Zone 2 is actually where people lived. Like my mum's family are all from Bermondsey, and they now all live in, you know, quite far out. They live like Essex Way, and that's because they were pushed out by gentrification to make way for people who could afford those houses in that area. And I guess we then get into a moral quandary, don't we? Of is that fair? On the face of it, no. But capitalism prevails.
Thank God.
Too fucking right. There's two sides to the coin here, isn't there? Like, we're talking about how difficult it is to get a mortgage, how high interest rates are, and the resulting impact on what people will pay monthly. But rent prices are also spiraling in the country as well. And I would applaud Keir Starmer for talking about the issue of housing in Prime Minister's questions. It was notable for me in the Chancellor's budget, which is what, more than just over a month ago now, I think, not a word about housing during that hour and a half.
Because it would embarrass them, because they've had to put up interest rates and that affects everyone's mortgages. You know, they never talk about buy-to-let landlords whose mortgages have gone up, and that price hasn't fallen on the landlords, it's fallen on the renters.
Who speaks for the landlords? Who speaks to the landlords in this country?
Will.
Yeah, that's my job podcast.
You've got 10 buy-to-let properties, don't
you? I do. Well, it's 15 if you have a good year this year.
You've got to be careful because no one gets the jokes that we make.
So. Yeah, that wasn't a joke. That was true. Ollie's my landlord.
Dead honest. So let's talk about rent as well, because, you know, rent... This is one of the things that annoys me, particularly about discussions around inflation in the country. So people will tell you, you know, CPI, RPI, it's 10%, 12%, 13%. But when you dial into the sources of that inflation and where it's coming from, food price inflation is like it's insane. You know, part loaves of bread, for example, you know, you're touching close to 30% at certain points over the last year.
Talk about cheese, Ollie. That's where we've really felt it.
I love cheddar. But rent as well, you know, rent prices are spiraling. I know friends who have struggled, literally they've lost flats because the landlord's gone, I want an extra 200 quid from you for the next year, and they've gone, well, obviously I can't afford to pay that. Then they get trapped in the absolute hellish process of trying to rent a property where they're asked to pay deposits on flats that they haven't seen. If they go and look at them and don't like them, that grand that they've given to the landlord to secure a viewing, they've lost that. You're literally there like refreshing on Rightmove and Zoopla looking at homes and waiting for 9 a.m. It's like trying to get a Glastonbury ticket or something. Waiting until 9 a.m. for the estate agent to open so you can call him. He's going, no, I've already got 50 viewings booked in.
My friends recently, obviously this is a very unique circumstance. They've secured a flat, and I think the deposit that they paid, it was 15 grand because it was 6 months rent up front.
What?
Is that not, like...
They paid rent up front, grand.
In fairness, because it's ridiculous, but one of them is in the very unique position of he is like a very wealthy startup founder.
All right.
So he had 15 grand. I think the other two were like, well.
You've got friends in startups. You never talked to me about this before.
Do you want an introduction?
15 grand, did you say?
They can give me a 15 grand deposit. He's handing them out. But like, that's lunacy, isn't it? But imagine being the letting agent or the landlord in good faith saying, you want this really shit three bed? You better stump up 15 big ones. Like, it's... Who has 15 grand to just give?
My landlord put it up to from 1800 was my rent in Tottenham, and they were like the very nice letting agent was like, oh, the landlord's going to put the rent up. I was like, okay, must be probably about 10%. Came back with 2,400.
Oh my gosh.
Nearly blew my face off. I couldn't believe it. What the? I mean, 2,400. Yeah. For two people to rent a flat that in Tottenham, that is ridiculous.
Yeah. That's absurd.
Still, though, I'm glad he's trying to talk about housing, even if it is from us. I'd really like to know why he thinks it's a nine grand deposit. Like, what's he buying?
Well, I suppose if you look at, you know, areas of the country, if you look in like outer Oxfordshire, I just had a cursory look earlier when he was talking about this, you can buy nice three bedroom homes that are £85,000. But the problem is that if you don't work in farming or you don't work in a restaurant that's in the area or a bar, pub, sorry, then you can't live there because you don't have any income. It's also transport. Basically, the UK needs a huge infrastructure rehaul. We need to rethink how we're doing transport. We need to rethink where we're putting hubs for business and different bases. And then we can talk about housing sprawl and we can talk about people moving to areas that aren't major cities. But to try and solve it as, well, just move to Oxfordshire now, we can't.
Mm-hmm. Sounds an awful like you're shilling for the 15-minute city lobby, Ava.
Listen, that was actually a really good proposal that got really watered down. You know who was good with that? Blair. Blair got that. He had the Sure Start program, and what he did was in areas where there were schools that were more deprived, he would put the food bank really local, mental health services very local, antenatal services like right nearby, so that mothers could go within 15 minutes to get to all of these services, and it meant the communities were stronger because of it.
That's actually a big lie from the Illuminati. I'm afraid you've fallen for it, Ava. One mark against you.
Yeah,
you're being marked on your Illuminati.
I love like a fairly banal urban planning measure that's like, yeah, it should be okay for people to live in an area where basically all of the amenities that they require are within a 15-minute journey of where they live. Mm-hmm. And then the sort of like anti-vax telegram lobby are like, no, they want to impose a social credit system that means that if you travel more than 15 minutes away from your home, you will be irreparably damaged, and you know you won't be able to leave the country ever again, or you have to pay a fine or something. It's just
see if you're in that mindset, life must be terrifying. Mm. As in every single measure which might help you, you're inherently suspicious of. That just must be like if you genuinely sincerely believe that, you must be like shitting yourself every time you leave the house about what the government's going to get you for.
Yeah, but I can calm down because driving, hypothetically, my child an hour to school, I've got a lot of thinking time, so I can really calm down there. And then another hour to get to the doctor's surgery.
A lot of reflecting time.
We have never had it so good.
It's the Politics Show podcast.
Stephen Flynn followed up Keir Starmer in Prime Minister's questions. Ava, what did Mr. Flynn ask the Prime Minister about?
Flynn went on student loans, which was very interesting, actually. He was talking about, well, I suppose because it's been in the news the past week, Keir Starmer has reneged on a policy originally put out during the Corbyn era, which was to abolish tuition fees. A lot of the big narrative at the moment has been talking about this huge debt that is encumbered on the nation because we are now paying a graduate tax rather than graduates paying back the loans themselves. And those loans are accruing interest, variable interest, somewhere between 9 and 12% every year, which means most graduates don't actually, they're accruing more interest than they're actually able to pay back. And that figure will be, the national debt will be £460 billion in unpaid loans by 2040. That's what Stephen Flynn was addressing.
I'm just looking at Keir Starmer's 10 pledges. Because, you know, he says in that leadership contest, I've seen the clips like flying around on Twitter where he's basically like, he's not just saying, oh, I think we should abolish tuition fees. He's like, it is morally wrong that we have tuition fees. And has he reneged on all of the 10 pledges for the leadership contest? Yeah.
But, you know, I think that he's in a really tricky position at the moment. I think that what he's essentially trying to do, he's trying to pit himself as the guy who will not leave the Treasury bankrupt. And I think perhaps announcing a policy which is we're going to eradicate student debt would frighten a lot of potential voters. And I understand that. But a conversation we could be having is getting rid of the interest on those loans, because it's obscene that you know, kids are graduating university at 23, and by the time they're 29, their £41,000 loan is now £56,000, and they've actually been paying towards it. But you might as well take out like a good, you know, local supermarket loan rather than because you'd get a really low interest rate compared to that.
My interest rate is higher than what I'm paying it back. Like it's getting bigger than
didn't pay tuition fees.
Oh yeah, forget.
Fucking prick.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That's
it's not because he went to Scotland, it's because his dad paid for
it. Dad gave me a blank check before the beginning of term.
Right, okay, 10 pledges. Number one, economic justice. Increase income tax for the top 5% of earners, reverse the Tories' cuts in corporation tax, and clamp down on tax avoidance, particularly of large corporations. No stepping back from our core principles.
Not once.
That final sentence, I think, would be the killer there for them, because he clearly has stepped back from his core principles.
Several times. Several steps
back. Most of the principles. If you don't like the ones, these principles, I've got others. Number two, social justice. Abolish universal credit and end the Tories' cruel sanctions regime. Set a national goal for well-being to make health as important as GDP. Invest in services that help shift to a preventative approach. Stand up for universal services and defend our NHS. Support the abolition of tuition fees and invest in lifelong learning.
So for the former, he did try. He has pledged to, yeah. But the latter,
no.
You can do that little.
Yeah.
There.
So I have done it. Yeah. So tuition fees. That's a big old reversal. Number three, climate justice. Put the Green New Deal at the heart of everything we do. There is no issue more important to our future than the climate emergency. A Clean Air Act to tackle pollution locally. Demand international action on climate rights. We're going to talk about this a little bit more in more detail like next, so I don't want to hang back, but I actually think they are kind of sort of semi-committed to that, and I think maybe not in the same sense, because obviously in the Corbyn manifesto there was that huge like new Green New Deal component that was radical investment in infrastructure and overhauling of the economy, and I'm actually really interested in what Labour is going to do in terms of green energy. So
don't entice me, I'm so excited.
That's coming later, dear listener, get ready for that. Promote peace and human rights, number four. No more illegal wars. Introduce a Prevention of Military Intervention Act and put human rights at the heart of foreign policy. Remove all UK arms sales and make us a force for international peace and justice.
Very Corbyn, that one in particular.
Yeah, that was
extremely Corbyn.
Super Corbyn, actually. He probably super anti-NATO, which was one of Corbyn's big pledges.
Yeah, it's quite anti-NATO.
Yeah.
He also does quite a few events with BAE, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. And actually during the football, when the World Cup, I don't know, you two watch it more than I do. The World Cup was the last big thing, right? Or Euros?
World
I don't
Cup
know, you guys were
December.
Watching a lot of football and everyone was watching it.
I think a lot of people were watching a lot of football.
Anyway, during that, yes, he did watch a few of the games and invited a lot of business leaders who might be involved in some of the things you just laid out.
Mm. But yeah, I mean, he hasn't invaded anywhere yet, so he hasn't
had a chance.
Yeah, given time, we'll see. We'll see about the no more illegal wars thing. Five.
That's a funny point to make.
Where would you go for? He goes for like Uruguay.
What would be like the worst imagery, like an attack on social democracy?
So Isle of Wight
or something.
Isle of Wight. Yeah, definitely.
That's the worst place you could do.
Could you invade your own country?
Yeah. Yeah, you can. In my plan. You make it like, okay, so you know how we have like a big problem with swans in the UK?
Tell me about it.
Yeah. Huge problem with them. We deport all of the swans to the Isle of Wight.
Perfect.
What about the residents of the Isle of Wight?
Well, that's an invasion, Ed. We don't care what happens to them.
Five, common ownership. Public services should be in public hands, not making profits for shareholders. Support common ownership of, here we go, rail, mail, energy and water, and outsourcing in our NHS, local government and justice system. I mean, that is just all. That's all gone, right? Mm. That's all a complete reversal. Other than common ownership of energy, British Energy was the the conference announcement. That was the big conference announcement for him.
Yeah, but
it?
I think that will be altered quite a bit. I think that will change radically. Have you got more pledges? Because otherwise we can get into energy.
Yeah, I do have more pledges, but I mean, it's defend migrants' rights. I mean, no. Strengthen workers' rights and trade unions. Haven't seen him on a picket line. Radical devolution of power, wealth and opportunity. Yeah, Keir, I'm also really looking forward to the coronation. Nine, equality. Yeah, I think he has kind of stuck to that. 10, effective opposition to the Tories.
I think what's interesting about Starmer, particularly with the student debt, like, who does this appeal to? Is a lot of like taxes in being introduced is to be like when the Tories do it, they make sure the elderly pay less tax and the young pay more tax because the elderly are the Tories' base. If you're alienating the young people, but not to the benefit of elderly people, that's just lowering. You're not enticing anyone to get on your side. Like, who's this for? It's just.
I look at this and I think you can look in the same way, like going through those pledges and looking about the stuff that he said he would adopt and then has, like, you know, done the opposite. It seems to me that his Starmer's Labour strategy is, well, it's not actually just to sort of take the votes for granted of the traditional Labour base. It's not just to go, look, those people are always going to vote for us, so I don't need to worry about them, and then try and set about convincing your swing voters that will hopefully get them to win an election. This is almost like actively alienating the base. It seems weirdly antagonistic.
I actually disagree with you.
Go on.
No, I slightly agree, but also disagree. So I think that he's going after the swing voters rather than the base. Mm. And I think that possibly a few months before the general election is when he'll start appealing to the people who would traditionally vote Labour. So I wouldn't be surprised if a couple of months, maybe even 6 months before, you'd start seeing him unveil maybe a housing policy. I was thinking, like, this is just off the top of my head, something like maybe 110% mortgage back guarantee. If you're a renter who's paid 7 months rent, you get a government backed 110% mortgage, similar to what they did in the 80s. But energy is where they get exciting, and energy is kind of the only proposal on the table that I think appeals to the under 40s. And it's not just that it's going to be green. What they're looking at is making the UK completely self-sufficient, so you wouldn't have a potential energy crisis in 20 years' time again. So what they want to do is build nuclear power stations. They take 10 years, and Nick Clegg famously 10 years ago denied the country any construction of a nuclear power station.
Yeah.
And where would we be if it hadn't been for Nick Clegg?
Not just him, successive governments, yeah. People obviously do get, like, quite angsty about nuclear power, and we need it, but you're right. And also, there's a really interesting sort of, like, the way I'm talking about Keir there and how I'm frustrated by his sort of, like, reversal on the sort of economically radical and social justice parts of those pledges. There is a tied up in that sort of green energy side of things. There is also quite powerful, almost like economically populist ideas around Shell, you know, 32 billion, I think it is, in pounds. Bang on, yes. you know, they're one of the largest profits in British corporate history and the best performance in its 115-year history, while BP, you know, more than doubled annual profits to $28 billion. There is a real, like, tax the bastards and then don't give them the get out of jail free that Rishi's provided with that investment clause that basically allows them to write off all of that windfall tax. Hammer those guys who have been price gouging during this crisis. Make them pay what they owe. Windfall them. I wouldn't have a problem with taking basically all of that. I don't think a war, like, happening on European soil means that you get to have 30 billion quid. I think it's unlucky.
That's outrageous.
I think we get to have it.
It's extraordinary as well, isn't it, how you explain those profits, because I can't quite comprehend them.
No.
I can't get it around my head that's what they're bringing in. Someone the other day was on a broadcaster talking about, yeah, but they're projected profits. And, you know, they don't know if their, you know, windfall won't be as big next year. So they need to bring it in now. I wanted to reach through the screen and strangle him.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think you can be pretty certain that those guys are going to keep posting record profits. I'd also urge listeners to keep an eye out for supermarket postings, Tesco, Sainsbury's, etc., who have also, again, been price gouging in a way during this crisis. Oh, yeah, inflation's up. Well, we better jack our prices. What's inflation at 10%? Oh, should we go for 25? Should we go for 30? Because we can kind of get away with it.
Do you know who did that the best?
Tell me.
A really high brand supermarkets, who I won't say the name of.
But which one? There's two.
A very
is that enough plausible deniability? Would that stand up in court?
What they've done compared to the other supermarkets is they've kept all their basics at the same price that they were before the Ukraine invasion and before the pandemic. So they've kept them all at normal prices. You can buy beans still for 40 pence, normal pricing. But they've inflated their focaccia. and their lentil soup and things like that to extraordinary amounts, which means that's how they're price gouging.
It's quite Robin Hood-esque.
Yeah.
I think some of the other products, like at the other supermarkets as well, it's the cheaper items, isn't it? That's where the hefty inflation is happening, and that's where it's really hurting people. But like I was saying, sorry, I think there is there's really powerful economic arguments about justice, about a fair tax system, and actually being quite progressive and quite left wing. And I agree with you. I think that's where energy can be really fertile ground for Labour, particularly if it does end up in this kind of Green New Deal type stimulus package. If you look at what Biden's done in the States, if you look at what the EU's done, chuck a fuckload of money into the system, investment. I mean, it does fall down kind of in the realms of practicality when you're looking at, the British government has been trying to build a high speed rail line for years and years. And I saw some crazy stat. I can't remember it exactly, but it's something like since the mid 90s, Spain has built 3,000 miles of high speed rail track, and in that time, the UK has built 50 or something. And I really worry. I love the ambition of, the Labour Party saying, yeah, we're going to go on this radical overhaul of our energy system, solar, wind, tidal, nuclear, the erection of pylons all across this country. No giggles from you two there. And
other word direction.
I was still laughing at the farce of solar panels.
But seriously, it's pretty radical ideas and quite transformative ideas about the country. I would just like to see those kind of that kind of strength of feeling and thought on the other parts of the Labour front bench.
See how the IEA is always on BBC Politics, etc. Who is the left-wing equivalent that we can uncritically platform, that we can have just have on a permanent open spot?
Torsten Bell.
Open invitation to Torsten.
Ed Miliband?
Ed Miliband, come on whenever he wants.
Ed Miliband, friend of Politics Joe.
A quick brainstorm of guests that can come on whenever they want.
Yeah. I think it's definitely Ed Miliband. I think there's always a seat for Ed Miliband at the table. It's the seat you're currently sat in.
Yeah, obviously. You can sit on me.
Would you give it up for him?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. No, I think it's interesting. And also, just a quick word on Ed Miliband. I think it's interesting seeing him. It feels like he's almost freed of, now that he's freed of the weight of leadership, seeing him, how he performs at the dispatch box and when he's talking about these and coming up with ideas like this, it almost makes you yearn for the 2010, 2015 soft left years, which is bizarre, not something I thought I'd ever say. But yeah, no, I think there's some interesting ideas there, and it's also important not to just completely rag on the Labour Party, because I do think they've got some interesting stuff going on there as
But the problem with them as well is that they're in a really uncomfortable position where the sticking plaster politics that Keir Starmer Keir Starmer always talks about, he's actually going to fall victim to that, because we have now, for the last 13 years, we've got used to just kind of covering up and paving over and doing quick fixes. Labour coming in and wanting to do radical industrial turnover, that's going to be really difficult to sell to the public. Like, oh, hey, we're going to come in and we're actually going to spend loads of your money. That's a really hard sell. But it's actually the only way that the UK can get itself out of the crisis that it's currently facing.
But then I wonder if the public would be receptive, in that they've spent no money for the past 13 years and everything's shit. I think that's quite,
yeah, that's a really good point.
A relatively easy thing to sell. Like, do you remember that youth centre? We're going to open it. I think the argument you've made, or that's the argument the Conservatives will make about they're going to spend all your money. I think with the right packaging and the right phrasing to perhaps typically unreceptive, unimaginative British public, I think that could be, you'd hope it'd be an easy sell, as in we're going to spend a lot of your money, a lot of public money, and things will improve. Seems an easy thing to
But then it's manage. So easy for the Tories to then go, you can't just spend your way out of a crisis.
Yes, absolutely. And the British public
Who was that an impression of?
You.
Yeah. but I also do think the British public is terminally unimaginative when it comes to policies and receptiveness.
That's good. Leave it there. Calling the British people thick.
I didn't say that. I said unimaginative.
Apart from you, dear listener. no, there's the perpetual fear, right, is you look at the polling and you go, wow, 20 points ahead. Wow, this is pretty extraordinary. Maybe there's going to be a Labour government. And then you get to polling day and everyone goes, nah, have another go.
I like being miserable.
Yeah, I just love the taste of that fucking boot.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Total Rhubarb.
It's the Politics Show podcast.
There's another quite substantial news event that's been happening.
Speaking of bootleg.
Yes, but speaking of that delicious fucking boot, let's talk about the coronation, eh? Both of you have been down to the Mall today and yesterday.
Me for work, Ava for leisure.
Yeah.
I hated every moment of it. I'm really sorry. If you had been here yesterday, I wouldn't have subjected myself to it.
What's the vibe like in the main room? How's it feeling in there?
I've been a couple of times down to the Mall for royal events in the past year.
Not for
you know you're on camera. Listeners, Ava was just miming a blowjob.
Are in for some fucking tweets, Ava Santina.
Woo!
Oh my days. Oh my days. Go on, Ed. Sorry. Keep going. Fuck.
So, I've been down at the Mall for Queen's Jubilee, Queen's Funeral, this one. I met a woman today who I met last year, a woman called Lucy. She was very nice. She was delighted. She was actually there with a friend she'd made from Uruguay and Kansas the previous year. When you go down, like, it is genuinely a really pleasant atmosphere. These people are there because they all have a shared interest, common interest. They're there to celebrate it. So it is like a party atmosphere. Would I do it myself? No. I don't think I would sleep on the pavement for any reason. I think it's an interesting choice.
You don't think that's a good assignment for Ed?
No. Obviously not. A bit late.
I camped out on the Mall.
No, but I'd quit.
No, it's just he doesn't need to because he's, you know, he lives in London. If he was coming from Glasgow, he would obviously come down a couple of days earlier and camp, so he had a good spot, because when he wants to make his pledge of allegiance to the king, he does want to be in as close proximity to him as possible.
I've said it every
weekend.
Day when I wake up, just to practice.
Yeah.
What's interesting though, you say people would be like, you'd be chatting to people and they'd be like, I'm not really a royalist though. And you're like, well, why are you here? Like, oh, just to see it. You're like,
yeah, I think I saw Nick Cave said something about it recently, and he's been invited and he's going, I actually sort of almost agreed with him, where it's like it's such a monumental historical event, even though whatever you think about the monarchy, you know, whatever, we can have that argument if we really want to. By the way, it's dumb, but. It is probably the most significant, other than the death of the Queen, the most significant sort of constitutional event for at least a generation.
Yeah.
So
a few generations.
If they invite you to go, you just go, no, what else am I going to be doing? You know.
I think it'd be interesting, as in I think the spectacle of it is interesting as like a historical.
Yeah,
artifact.
It is. I don't know where I fit into it because I love the pomp and the ceremony, and I'll definitely watch it just to see the orb.
Is extraordinary.
Yeah.
Like, do you remember at the Queen's funeral? They chose like the 8 Marines with the best, most expressive faces to carry the coffin. That's why they were chosen, because they had like bug eyes and like weird mouths.
Really?
Like, that's why they were chosen to carry the. Do you remember that? You know that image of, I think it was on probably the cover of the Times, maybe. Was all of this like really, a Marine carrying the coffin right at the front, and his face is contorted in like agony. He was picked because his face can do that. I think that like the ceremony and the thought that goes into it, the whole thing is theatre and spectacle.
Did the Queen worry she wasn't going to get the front page?
I don't know if she chose him specifically, but I think like it's so interesting the amount of thought, etc., that goes into it, and it's like,
you know, they practice at night.
Yeah.
You know, it's been going on like the last few nights.
That's what.
Yeah, I do. Oh no, you weren't here this morning. I was at Waterloo last night at 10:30, and there were loads of soldiers in the station, and I was like, "What the hell?" I phoned my dad, and I was like, "Oh my god, what do you think's happening?"
It's a fucking coup. It's happening, Dad. Get to Buckingham Palace.
Yeah.
We're raising the flag.
Bring the boots.
Someone I spoke to as well said, I asked her about anti-monarchist sentiment, and she said, "Well, you don't need to join in, but don't ruin it for everyone else." And I kind of think, well, say you're a Republican, this event is kind of being inflicted on you. You can't opt in to it. I think that's an argument against Republic sentiment. But if there's a bank holiday, if there's a 3-day celebration for something you fundamentally don't believe in, I think it's tricky to not.
But would they apply that to the picket line? Everyone's got so much to say about workers, you know, going on strike or taking strike action. Well, do you know what? That's my day, okay? That's when I have a good time.
You're at work.
Do we think that the monarchy should be opt-in? Do we think there's a different model there?
I'm a big believer, or my new package of ideas. Any political party would like to commission a strategist.
any political party.
Yeah, a subscription model. So there's always this talk about, well, they only cost us a penny per day, each taxpayer, right?
Mm.
Well, okay, you pay for it and I'll opt out of that subscription. Because for me, I'd rather see Buckingham Palace empty. We could get more tourists in there and generate more income. Tourism will prevail. I don't really care if King Charles has enough security around him. I don't care.
So you're basically suggesting King Charles opens an OnlyFans account?
Sure. Listen, do you know what? If we're going to get really heavy, there will be people who will reply to that point and they'll say, well, people will attack King Charles. Well, do you know what? Do you know how many men attack women every single day on our streets and they are never held to account? So maybe we should take the money from King Charles and give a personal security guard to every woman that wants to walk the streets past 10 p.m.
By herself.
Are you bold enough to engage with that point?
No.
Neither am I.
So that's where we'll finish. Ava Santina, an absolute pleasure, never a chore. Thanks very much.
Ollie.
Cheers, Ed Campbell. Wish I could say the same about you, pal. Thanks very much, everyone. We'll catch you on the next one. Cheers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.